the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The new administration of President Barack Obama has made any number of appointments. Many of them have made the news. One of them needs to. President Obama has nominated lawyer David Ogden to be the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. And I wrote about it today at my website at albertmohler.com. We're going to be talking about it today. The title of my article is Pornography, Public Culture, and the New Administration. Pornography presents every public leader with a moral test, which is also a legal test. And when you're talking about the Department of Justice, you're talking about where the law is the most important issue. The issue is this: what kind of signal are we sending on the reality and the devastating reality of pornography? David Ogden, now nominated by President Obama to be the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, is one of the most extremist defenders of pornography in every form. He has opposed laws and has defended those charged with child pornography. He has argued that pornography is a form of protected free speech in virtually any form. He has fought every restriction on pornography, and now he has been nominated to a role in which one of the chief defenders of the pornography industry is supposedly now going to become the prosecutor of the very laws he has fought. The legal theory here is even more dangerous than the issue of pornography taken alone. And we're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to try to put it in the right perspective and talk about it in just the right way, but it gets to the heart of the issue about pornography. It gets to the heart of the issue about what kind of culture, of civilization, of society we intend to be, and it gets right to the issue of political responsibility. Now, not only the responsibility of the president who has made this nomination, but of the Judiciary Committee, the United States Senate, which must decide on the confirmation in terms of a recommendation. And eventually, if this committee sends it on to the full Senate, every single member of the United States Senate is going to be on the line about the signal that is sent about pornography, public culture, and the future of our society. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to encourage you to call. I'll be giving you more in terms of background about this issue in just a moment. And we will also be turning to your calls. Just call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're also, of course, starting our discussion thread right now at Twitter. Just go to twitter.com, sign up to follow Mohler Radio, and you can follow there. We'll be glad to hear from you there. And at Facebook, just look for the page, the Albert Mohler Program. And you can always write us by email. Just mail us at albertmohler.com. First, to review some of the other issues in the news, the Times of London's out with one of those stories that takes a first, second, and third look. Now get this. Here's the headline. Married? You're in a minority now as wedding rates fall to record low. Now, one of the things you always have to look at when you get these statistics about, for instance, married couples becoming a minority is that over time, many people are not yet married and many people are widowed after marriage. And counting them as unmarried really doesn't establish much of an adequate or meaningful comparison. But there's no doubt that weddings in Great Britain, following a trend that is present also here in the United States, but especially in Western Europe, these wedding rates are now at a 100-year low. Let me just read to you how this story begins. It says, married couples are a minority for the first time since records began, as fewer people choose to tie the knot. The figures show that couples are less likely to get married now than ever before, with the rate of weddings at a 100-year low. The marriage rate, a more accurate guide to the long-term trend, also fell sharply to a record low in 2007. Here's one that really caught my attention, a fact. Only 1 in 50 single women now marries each year, and only 1 in 43 single men. These are the lowest marriage rates since they were first calculated in 1862. All right, this is really interesting. You know, there's a difference between a wedding and marriage. Marriage is the covenant. Marriage is the long-lasting relationship. Marriage is the institution. The wedding is the party, the ceremony, and it's not unimportant because these vows are taken publicly, because it's a covenant made before God and our fellow human beings. And so even as the wedding is important, the wedding rate is far less significant than the marriage rate, because there are people who get married without the ceremony of a wedding in terms of British society, in terms of a civil ceremony. One of the things this points out is that church marriages were, even in the 19th century, it preserved somewhat of the wealthy who could afford them. But what we're talking about here is not just the question of whether there is a church wedding or not, or any kind of expensive ceremony, or any ceremony at all. Marriage itself has fallen to an all-time low. The Guardian, which is the more left-wing paper there in London, has a very interesting headline. It says, "Job scares, divorce payoffs, and lavish do. Why marriage rates have plummeted." That phrase, lavish do, is a typically British way of saying expensive weddings. One of the disincentives for people to get married, it says here, is an expensive wedding. Well, again, I see that as one of the problems in our contemporary confusion. People ought to be getting married, and the wedding ought to be seen as a party that's appropriate, a public ceremony that is very important. But doing something lavish and extravagant and expensive is often more an exercise of narcissism than indeed of the reality of what marriage is to be all about. Now, one of the interesting things here, it says that in Great Britain, and this is shocking. I was doing an interview earlier today on the issue of marriage in the United States, and I pointed out that I'm very troubled by the fact that the age of first marriage for the American male is now over 27, and the average age for the American female is now over 23 to 24. But get this. This is from the Office for National Statistics in Great Britain. Listen to this. The average groom being married now is almost 37 years old, and the average bride nearly 34. Do you realize that in most of human history, this means that wedding is coming, marriage is coming, after persons have already come into the final phase of what is expected as their reproductive future? You start looking even now at pregnancy rates, at successful pregnancies carried to full term, and you look at the rise of fertility treatments when you get to people this age, you're now looking at the average husband, the groom here, being 37 years old at the point of marriage, and the bride 34. Weddings themselves, according to The Guardian, are down 25% since the 1990s. You know, I am less concerned with what this paper tends to see as important in terms of causality. I'm far more concerned with the fact that this main, the thrust of this story is the sidelining of marriage, the marginalization of marriage, the fact that marriage has become something people think they can do without, and cohabitation rates are rising. Folks, one of the major responsibilities of a civilization is to establish the rules by which the central institution of the family will be established. And you don't have to have a PhD in sociology to know that where marriage is not seen as a fundamentally binding contract of monogamous fidelity, you have the family begin to break down. And, of course, the pathologies come. And in Great Britain, they are already evident. But so, too, in the United States, there's plenty of evidence of what happens when marriage is marginalized. Very interesting story in the Wall Street Journal. We'll be talking about this next week because this gets right down to where a lot of people are living and where a lot of couples will now face hard decisions. Here's the headline from the Wall Street Journal. A baby, please. Blonde freckles hold the colic. The subhead under the headline, laboratory techniques that screen for diseases in embryos are now being offered to create designer children. Now, this is routinely denied. You'll hear people that supposedly are in a position to know say this kind of thing isn't happening, but we know it is happening because we have parents who are now bragging on their successful child by this kind of designer technology. Now, PGD, which is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, is what happens when in a fertility clinic you have a fertilized egg, now an embryo, that can be tested in order to determine its genetic characteristics. And a lot of these tests are done for what might be called negative screenings. In other words, to make sure that this embryo does not have Down syndrome, that this embryo does not have this disease or a propensity to that disease. Now, I find that insidious. That in itself is an assault upon the dignity and sanctity of every human life. That means right there that at least to the embryonic stage, we have lots of Americans who are ready to say, that one deserves to live, that one doesn't deserve to live. But the same technology that can be used negatively to screen out embryos that carry certain markers can also be used to screen in. That is to say, I'm looking for an embryo that has these characteristics. I want a boy. I want a girl. I want it to have this color eyes. I want it to have this kind of propensity. I want it to have athletic ability. I want it to have superior IQ. Now you have all kinds of things that can be done. One person involved, very heavily involved in this, said no legitimate lab would get into it. If they did, they would be ostracized. That's Mark Hughes of Genesis Genetics Institute in Detroit. However, others are saying, look, it's being done. Others are frightened by the criticism, says Jeff Steinberg, director of the Fertility Institutes. But he says, even as others are frightened by the criticism, we have no problems with it. Folks, if you have no problems with this, welcome to the brave new world. Because the world you are inviting to become the world of the future is a world in which we now define human beings on the basis of how they are ordered and what's acceptable and what's not. This is an assault upon the dignity of every human life. It's the insinuation that we will now have children, we will only have the children that meet our expectations, our designer custom order. That, folks, is scary. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The problem of pornography is one that certainly attracts our attention because we see the devastation. And what we are witnessing now is the transformation of our society into a largely ambient pornographic society. It's all around us. It's virtually everywhere. It's in the shopping malls, it's in the advertising, the merchandising, the entertainment culture all around us. At my website at albertmohler.com today, I wrote an article entitled Pornography, Public Culture, and the New Administration. And I'm talking about the administration of President Barack Obama. And that requires me to do just a little bit of work before we get to the issue. In looking at this new administration and our Christian responsibility, I'm trying to determine as best I can what faithfulness to Christ requires of me in response to this new administration. Now, I know that I am required by Scripture to pray for the president. I eagerly do that. And I've even written an article, in fact, more than one, about how I pray for this president. And I do pray for him. When it comes to thinking about the politics of the situation, I now divide my understanding into three different areas. Number one, I want to work with this president wherever I can. Where there is common ground and common purpose, where his policies, his appointments, his decisions are those which deserve our support, I want to eagerly support them. I am morally obligated to hope that he succeeds rather than fails. But at the same time, we have a deep disagreement over some of the most important issues facing this country of a moral perspective, in particular the sanctity and dignity of every single human life and the sanctity of the institution of marriage. Those are the first two of my agenda. The second thing I want to say is that there's some issues on which I will disagree with this president, but I will never make them an issue on this radio program because these are not issues at which the Christian worldview is dramatically at stake, and the future of our society in terms of our moral character as a nation, that it's not at stake in such a direct way. And wisdom requires that we understand that there's some issues in which we're going to disagree, but we don't make a major point of it, not on this program. This is a program about intelligent Christian conversation about the things that matter the most. So I'll tell you right up front, I profoundly disagree with this stimulus bill. I think it is laden with pork. I think it's just an example of what government does at its worst rather than at its best when it tries to deal with a financial situation. I think it just gave some members of the House of Representatives carte blanche to load it up with all the pork they could imagine, kind of payback for what they see as an opportunity to just load it up, and they did. But we're not taking calls on that issue. I have not raised that issue. I haven't even talked about it in the opening segment where we review the news because, in my judgment, that's not an issue in which I need to take a decisive stand where I believe the future of the culture is at stake and a great matter of Christian moral concern is present. That's a matter of prudential disagreement. There can be people of goodwill and good faith who are followers of the Lord Jesus Christ and who are faithful in their daily walk, who will disagree over the response to this economic crisis, who will disagree about the formation and character and contents of an economic stimulus bill, or even whether there should be such a bill. I'm going to leave that to some other program and some other conversation. So I'm going to work with and agree with this president where I can. I'm morally obligated to do that. I'm going to be quiet about a lot of issues in which we disagree that I don't think are really of fundamental importance to the agenda of Christians in terms of where we need to be engaged as Christians. But there is that third category. And when it comes to the sanctity of human life, I'm going to have to speak. When it comes to the integrity of family, I'm going to have to speak. When it comes to protecting religious liberty, I'm going to have to speak. When it comes to any number of issues of human dignity, I'm going to have to speak. And I have to speak to the issue of pornography, because President Barack Obama has disappointed me tremendously by the appointment of David Ogden, a lawyer, to be the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. David Ogden's high visibility in defense of the pornography industry sends a clear and unmistakable message. And to this I have to respond. The pornography industry will now have a high friend in the Department of Justice. Now, others have written far more extensively about the legal record that's at stake here, but David Ogden can only be described as a First Amendment extremist who has even argued against laws that would limit and prevent child pornography. He has argued that there's a basic constitutional right to send pornography, for instance, to cell phones. He has argued against virtually any law that would restrict pornography in any form. And I find that very, very ominous. I think the signal that is sent there is very dangerous. In testimony before the Judiciary Committee, the United States Senate last week, David Ogden indicated that he will prosecute those who are involved in pornography that is illegal. But in so doing, he will be prosecuting those he's been defending. He'll be making arguments diametrically opposed, if indeed he makes them, to the ones he's staked his career on to this point. A couple of interesting things, by the way. I quote Matthew Schmitz, writing at the Public Discourse, who says, in addition to making it harder to prosecute those who sell images of child molestation and rape, Ogden has sought to ensure that pornography can be easily distributed and readily accessed in almost any medium or location. He has fought cases in Puerto Rico to allow Playboy to broadcast explicit programming on television. He represented Philip Harvey, a man who runs the nation's largest mail-order pornography shop out of North Carolina, in his attempt to deflect a Department of Justice investigation of his business. Completing a sort of multimedia grand slam, Ogden has sued to allow sexually explicit content to be transmitted over the phone. Taking this request to its absurd limits, he has even claimed in court that there is a constitutional right for pornography to be kept in firehouses. Do with that what you will. Roger Scruton, who I think to be one of the brightest philosophers and observers out there in the world today, writing at the same source, that is, the Public Discourse, writes, the idea that pornography is speech, that he puts that in quotation marks, speech, within the meaning of the First Amendment and thereby protected by the Constitution is so absurd that it is hard for an outsider, Roger Scruton, by the way, is British, to see how American judges have been persuaded to accept it again and again. Of course, porn is big business and can afford to keep beating at the doors of the courts, but the real reason for the legalization of pornography in America lies at the culture of the liberal elite and in the strategy of legal activism, whereby that elite continues its relentless assault on majority values. Porn has been incorporated, he writes, into the culture war precisely because ordinary Americans see it as a threat to family and religious values. This fact is sufficient to prompt the liberal establishment to add porn to its agenda as one more thing to be defended in the court against the legislature. Again and again, Roger Scruton writes, we have seen this process at work as the values and transgressions of elites are seized upon by the ACLU and similar organizations, rebranded as essential liberties and defended as constitutional rights regardless of their subversive effect on society as a whole. Now, in my view, pornography is one of the most insidious dimensions of American culture today. I've written about it extensively. My new book, Desire and Deceit, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance, deals extensively with the challenge of pornography. I go into pretty comprehensive detail about the shape of that threat and what it really means. I ask the question at the end of my article, what signal does President Obama intend to send by this nomination and to whom? Of all the persons who would have been legally qualified to be nominated to be Deputy Attorney General of the United States, why David Ogden, known as the most extreme defender of pornography in contemporary American legal life today? There is a signal being sent here. This is not by accident. Now, folks, again, I feel like I am bound, and happily so, to defend and work with this president where that's deserved. I think there is a vast segment of his political decisions that are simply off limits to this program because nothing of essential moral nature is at stake. But there is this third category, And for the first time in this new administration, I find myself facing it. It's time to talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about pornography, and I'm wondering whether we're really in this fight anymore. I wonder if we really have the heart for it, because I'm just noticing that this story isn't getting a lot of attention, the story being the appointment of David Ogden as Deputy Attorney General of the United States. President Barack Obama has made this appointment. I've asked very clearly, you know, what kind of signal is he intending to send? Because when you put someone with this kind of visibility in defense of porn in charge of such a major responsibility, for indeed the Justice Department of the United States, you're sending an incredible signal. Do you really think that pornography is something we ought to fight? And if so, let's talk about how to do so and on what grounds. Let's talk about whether or not you think an appointment like this is going to make a difference, and whether or not it's just something that you think we should overlook and move on. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. Glad to hear from you, of course, also. As you have the opportunity to call us at 877-893-8255 or write us at mail@albertmohler.com or go to Twitter at Mohler Radio, and we're glad to hear from you there as well. All right. Now, the issue of pornography. We need to recognize that there are some, in fact, I'm getting some emails right now, folks writing and saying, pornography is a form of free speech. Someone writing me saying, sorry, but pornography is covered by the First Amendment. Well, you know, sorry, not entirely, and well, not certainly in the way it's being argued here. I mean, right now, there are plenty of laws in the books against pornography. There are rather clear, very clear laws against child pornography. There are laws against the illegal distribution of pornography. There are laws against selling pornography to a minor. There are all kinds of laws that have to do with pornography that are on the books and have passed constitutional muster. Now, I will go further than that and say that I think the courts have wrongly ruled. I think that when the courts accepted that pornography is a form of speech, we opened the door to a catalog of the horribles, of problems that will follow quickly in that train. But what we're talking about here is the fact that a man who's been making the most extreme arguments in defense of pornography is now nominated to be Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Out of all the lawyers that the President of the United States could have chosen for this post, he chooses one with this kind of national and public reputation. I find that very troubling. Now, I know that the President's making hundreds of nominations, but below the cabinet level, there are few positions of greater public visibility and significance than Deputy Attorney General of the United States. For no other reason than the fact that the Deputy Attorney General in this case is in charge of an enormous amount of prosecution. Well, you could also make the case that one of the reasons why you need to be particularly careful about who becomes Deputy Attorney General of the United States is because they have a way of becoming Attorney General of the United States in successive years or administrations. Let's go to Jennifer, listening on WFIA, calling in Louisville, Kentucky. What do you think, Jennifer?
Well, Dr. Mohler, I've more recently come to identify pornography as a form of slavery, because I know the girls get kind of lured into it, but a lot of times they can't get out because of drug addictions or fear of harm, and especially with child pornography, that is nothing less than just human oppression. And if there was the outrage against pornography that there is against slavery, there's no question.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about there, Jennifer. You're talking about especially the women who are involved in this, and they are being commodified. There's no other way to put it. I want to be real careful, and Jennifer, I just want to offer this as a word of some hesitation. I want to be real careful about comparing anything to anything else in terms of its historical significance. I'm very much concerned with comparing anything to chattel slavery as practiced in America up until the Civil War in the 19th century. I think we'd be really careful comparing anything to the Holocaust, but I understand the temptation, and I agree with your basic point wholeheartedly. You're looking here at a form of enslavement. You're looking here at what others would call the commodification of women. They are being turned into consumer products. And as you are absolutely right, Jennifer, they're being asked to put their health at stake, their future at stake, their soul at stake. They're being presented in airbrushed, artificial terms, doing the most degrading, demeaning things. And they're being really enticed to do so just by money. Maybe perhaps also by some celebrity or anything else. But regardless of what you do that, this is where someone like Karl Marx is exactly right. When you commodify someone like that, you are entering them into some form of slavery, regardless of what you want to call it. And, you know, I think to take the metaphor just a little bit further, Jennifer, the other side of this is that there are those who become slaves to this sin in a New Testament sense. And that's just the further trail of this tragedy as well. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about pornography and the appointment of David Ogden to be Deputy Attorney General of the United States. President Barack Obama has made that appointment. He has had initial hearings, at least, before the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate. And if that committee forwards the nomination and the full Senate confirms, then America's perhaps most famous and many believe extremist defender of pornography rights will be Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Now, interestingly enough, before the Judiciary Committee, lawyer David Ogden said that he would prosecute the cases according to the law. But isn't it ironic to imagine that he would then be making arguments opposite to the ones he had been making in constitutional law, trial, argumentation, publication, public square, until now? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Dan calling from Raleigh, North Carolina, listening to XM 170. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. My comment would be that sometimes laws, or many times laws, are symptoms. What I mean by that is perhaps we need to focus a discussion on looking at the root cause, and that's how we raise our children to understand the devastation of pornography.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a point to be made there. That's why I wrote my book, Desire and Deceit, Dan. Subtitle is The New Cost, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance. And in terms of my pastoral responsibility and being president of a school with an awful lot of young men, yeah, that's where I direct so much of my attention. But I also understand that beyond the people I get to see, there are thousands and millions of victims of pornography that are outside of our reach. There are children who do not have Christian parents who are made vulnerable by this. There are young women who are entrapped within this industry. And there are young men by the millions whose souls are being devastated, whose lives are being warped, and whose future marriages, if indeed they ever get married, are being really devastated by the scourge of pornography. Social policy is never, and I appreciate your point, social policy is never sufficient, not when you're dealing with human beings. Because you can have all the right laws in place, and people are still going to be sinners. And you're still going to have not only laws in place, but you're going to have eventually people who want to obey those laws. Otherwise, the law becomes a farce. So I take your point at face value, and frankly, that's where I give most of my time and most of my writing. But when it comes to public policy, I do say, and I feel I have to say, that when a president of the United States makes an appointment of this kind of notorious significance, it ought not to pass our notice and our concern. And, of course, there's still time for the United States Senate and the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate to do something responsible here and say to this president, you can do better than this nomination. And I'll go so far as to say presidents, I believe, should be given wide latitude in nominations. There should be basically a deference to the power of the executive to make these nominations unless the nominee is someone who's just profoundly and clearly unqualified, either by expertise or by character. And in this case, I think it's probably both. I can't read the man's heart, but I can read his arguments. And they're scary enough. Thanks so much for your call, Dan. You can join the conversation by calling me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, Dan speaking, it just reminds me to say, parents, you're the front line on this. The Deputy Attorney General of the United States is not on the front lines of this in terms of the lives of your children. You are. And Dad, with your sons, you are. Parents, with your children, you better believe you are. And that's where we have got to be on the front lines of this. And prevention, in this case, is far more likely than cure. Once you have this garbage in, it does its damage. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Be very glad to hear from you. Again, I'm getting emails from people who are saying, you know, I'm just not sure that this is exactly the right fight. I'm not sure that that we should be fighting this in terms of public policy. And again, I would simply say, then where do you draw the line? Now, I would agree. I would be absolutely in agreement that you can't legislate about everything. You can't have laws that regulate everything. Otherwise, everything becomes merely the procedural bureaucracy of the law. But you have to legislate against those things that represent a clear and present threat to the health of society. And I believe that pornography is one of those things. And maybe I just have too much experience dealing with people who have been in this struggle. Maybe I've just seen so many marriages and so many lives that have been warped by pornography. Maybe there are an awful lot of Christians who really want to put their heads in the sand on this one. But even if you are not struggling with this issue, someone you know and love is. I say that without the slightest hesitation. If you, by God's grace, are not struggling with this, someone you know and love is. Whether you know it or want to admit it or not. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Had another email writing in to say, okay, so what do we do about it in terms of this appointment? Well, we talk about it. That's the first thing. And there is still an opportunity to make your concern very much known, first of all, to your senators, to the United States Senate as a whole, and in terms also of letting President Barack Obama know where you disagree with him on this nomination and how disappointed you are that a man with this kind of experience and track record would be nominated to be Deputy Attorney General of the United States. You can find my article entitled Pornography, Public Culture, and the New Administration at albertmiller.com. And, of course, I would refer you to my new book, Desire and Deceit, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance, where I deal extensively with this. And let me just give you a heads up. I deal extensively with it with a very direct address to the problem of pornography and young men. The problem of pornography and the delay of marriage. The problem of pornography and the confusion of beauty. And the effects are devastating, and they are multiple, and they are long-lasting. You know, one way that pornography is factoring into our contemporary problem, it goes back to that originating news story, the top of the hour I talked about, where marriage is becoming a matter of tremendous delay in Great Britain, and we are not that far behind. One of the reasons why a lot of young men aren't getting married is because they are finding enough satisfaction in pornography that they are not driven to mature, grow up, and take on the responsibilities of being a husband. That's pretty sad in and of itself. But it isn't hard to imagine that the life of many young men these days is given to this as a substitute for what they're actually called to do. And I see, as I've said, the devastation in those lives. And it's not just thus in the lives of those young men, but also the young women who are just waiting for a young man to grow up and be ready to be a husband. It messes up so much, and it is so unnecessary. In a sinful world, it's simply one of those things with which, nonetheless, we have to deal. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Did get by email a smart question. Good one. Phil wrote to say, is it fair to assume that a lawyer who is paid to argue on his client's behalf will agree with his client's views? It may show that he is mercenary or amoral, but being paid in the past to represent pornographers does not mean that in his new capacity will continue to argue for them, does it? Well, let me just suggest that at this level of the law, one is not obligated to take anyone as a client. So he's willingly taken this person as a client. Now, by the way, Phil, you're on to exactly the argument that David Ogden made before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He argued, look, I was just representing my client. The reason that doesn't wash with me is because he developed an expertise in this by his own interest. There's another reason why I'm not buying it. And I refer again to Matthew Schmitz's piece that I linked to in my article. Let me just read to you this. If confirmed to be Deputy Attorney General, Ogden will be responsible for prosecuting the same clients he once represented. His long history in government and private practice suggests he will not have the objectivity to do so fairly. Now, here's the crucial part. While clerking for Justice Harry Blackmun at the beginning of his career, Ogden wrote a memo that heaped scorn on opponents of public obscenity. Speaking of the distinction between commercial and non-commercial material that may be offensive, he said, and so I'm quoting now from the memo that David Ogden wrote to the late Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun, who is, by the way, of course, the author of the Roe v. Wade decision as well. This is from the memo. Quote, it will prevent the morality-based type of regulation at issue here from being employed to stop the advertisement of a host of products which the, quote, moral majority types or their successor in interest disapprove. If they are deprived of the offensiveness, that's in quotation marks, excuse, they'll have to come up with a more creative excuse. Actually, it says with more creative excuses. So in other words, this is a man who's been making the arguments on behalf of pornography before he had a client. This is when he was a clerk doing research for a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. There's more than a coincidence here. There is an ideology here. And David Ogden himself has left a written record from the time he was a Supreme Court clerk to the time that he is now the nominee to be Deputy Attorney General of the United States that makes that point. Folks, thanks for joining the conversation by Twitter, at Facebook, by email, and, of course, on the air here at albertmuller.com. This is a new day. We're glad to hear from you in so many different ways and sometimes all at once. This has been an amazing week, hasn't it? Yesterday being the 200th anniversary, the birth of both Charles Darwin and Abraham Lincoln. So many interesting things happening, just like what's happening in Washington. A lot of stuff that we did not discuss on this program that nonetheless is of importance to our nation and its future. Folks, as we come to the end of the week, let's remember to pray for President Barack Obama. Pray for him in the right way. Let's pray for our nation. Because at the end of the day, this nation is not in our hands, but in his. I'll meet you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.